Hello and welcome to the World Scouting Podcast by the European region of WASM.
Hello, welcome and bienvenue to the podcast of the European Scout Region, your favorite region of the World Organization of the Scout Movement. My name is Lars Kramm and I'm here in the studio today with my colleague from the European Scout Committee, Matthias Gert.
Hello, everyone.
Also with us today is our special guest, who will share with us experience and perspective that are hopefully relevant for young people in Europe. Welcome, Juna. Who are you and where are you now?
Hello, everybody. It's great to be with you and to at least listen to you. And it feels already being very close to each other. My name is Juna. I'm from Luxembourg and I'm sitting currently here in Luxembourg. So basically in the heart of Europe, very close to Schengen, a town name in Luxembourg that everyone from Europe should be aware of. Shall I tell a bit more about who I am and what I do? Or
we would love to learn more about your scouting background and what you do in real life.
All right. So I've been international commissioner for one of the NSAs in Luxembourg for 4 years. Previously, I've been on the international team. I've been a trainer in Luxembourg. So that lasted until, when was it? 2017-ish. While being IC, I started being active also for the European Scout region, where I became the coordinator of the previous triennium, where I was in charge of communications and representatives of scouting, as well as funding and partnerships. So all of these areas where I had the chance to coordinate great teams and be involved even more within the WASM bubble and the scout bubble. I did that until the World Scout Conference in Split. After that, I stopped being as much active as I was before. Also because I got a new, let's call it, job opportunity. It's not really a job, it's more a mandate. I've been elected in Luxembourg for the Luxembourgish Parliament, where I'm sitting since end of 2018. I'm also the vice president of the Luxembourgish Parliament and the party president of my party, which is the Green Party in Luxembourg. So that explains a bit why I am a bit too busy to do scouting, but I try to support my NSA from time to time by doing some trainings and supporting them at events, because it feels good to keep like a close link to my scout family there. And where I also can support the movement is by being the president of the Scout Parliamentarians in Luxembourg. So, as you know, there are in many parliaments scout parliamentarians, so parliamentarians which feel very close to scouting, who have been scouts themselves. And in Luxembourg, almost half of the parliament is a scout parliamentarian. So it explains once again how big scouting is in Luxembourg. And I'm chairing this group of people.
Lars, Juna mentioned an abbreviation there, NSA. Maybe you should explain to our audience what that means.
Yeah, the NSAs, the National Scout Associations, are the parts of an NSO, which is a National Scout Organization. Normally, if they have a federation of different smaller associations with different scouting cultures that come together, then these individual associations are called NSAs or National Scout Associations. But after all this, what you just told us, Juna, the question that probably the most people who are listening at the moment have is, when was the last time you actually slept in a tent?
Yeah, I have been thinking about that question. You said a bit briefly what we will be talking about, and I'm very glad that you got me this question already before, because I had to think for some time. And honestly, I'm rather ashamed of this, because actually I think every scout should like say, oh, just 2 weeks ago, or say something like that. And in my case, it was at the Roverway in the Netherlands in 2018, and it's far too long ago. So yeah, I definitely should change something about that. So I hope to have a new opportunity to sleep in a tent this summer at some scout event or something like that.
When was the last time you slept in a tent, Matthias?
I think it was at the same event, to be honest.
Same tent?
Yeah, I think, no, for once it wasn't the same tent, but I think it was there as well. But as Judah said, I would have to think a little bit more, maybe.
Well, if members of the European Scout Committee have been sleeping in a tent 3 years ago, I feel less ashamed now, so... You guys deal with that. So Lars, you can save Matthias or at least the reputation of the European Scout Committee by saying it was last week, right?
It wasn't last week, it was last summer. It was a camp at home. We camped actually in our garden as well as part of a lockdown COVID-19 events weekend by the Scouts in Northumberland in the UK. So that was the last time I spent. But we have something planned for this summer. So hopefully the next time this answer will be shorter.
Well, now let's dive into our main topic here. And speaking of summer and hot temperatures, we have been seeing some changes there. And Julia, you said you are, among other mandates that you have, also the leader of the Green Party. And the Green Party obviously is, well, let's say, concerned about the environment, environmental change. And we hear a lot about sustainability. But maybe you can explain us a little bit more what this means for you, environment, sustainability, and why is it important for especially for young people in Europe?
Yeah, I mean, sustainability as such is quite a broad term. And for me, it means making possible that the future generations will have the same resources than we have living today. What do I mean with resources? It means also living conditions. It means walking around in the nature, seeing a huge biodiversity in our countries. It means also climate change or stopping climate change, because we see how many repercussions that has on our world, on our planet, and also we see it here in Europe. A few years ago, the narrative was, okay, climate change, if it exists, it's far away. And I think all over the European region, we also notice climate change more and more, and other countries have been noticing it already much before us. So it means being careful of how we produce, how we consume, how we move from one part of to the other, how we work and live with each other, how we build houses and how we structure our whole lifestyle, so that we don't live on the costs of future generations. So basically that's, for me, the whole topic of sustainability, and I already said it in my answer, it declines itself on so many different aspects. So it's more than just saving biodiversity or stopping climate change or at least reducing climate change. It also means on how we produce, how we live with each other, so it's basically a holistic view on that, and it is something that we all witness as individuals, as human beings, and where we all can have our small impact on that. But it also is something where we need a global change, also from a political point of view. And for me, of course, as being the party president of the Green Party, the political perspective on that and what do we have to do as politicians, as decision makers, to have a more sustainable lifestyle is basically the core of what I do.
We have talked a little bit about sustainability, and in November there will be the famous COP26, already the 26th UN conference on climate change in Glasgow. What do you expect from that?
Well, I mean, after Paris, which was really the major
climate conference with a very huge success rate, I think the next expectation would be that we would have a climate conference in Glasgow, hopefully, where countries can agree on, like, I mean, they defined targets. Back in Paris, they defined how many, like, what goals they would want to achieve. But the question now would be, how do the countries do that in their own realities? I mean, some of us have transport as a huge problem. Others are more focused on agriculture, on building, on tourism. So all these matters are a bit individual, talking of each countries. And I think the important part would be to streamline this also on an international panel, and also to see how all the different countries would put that into reality. So sectorial targets, so that we can basically measure all of this on an international plan. And I mean, another issue would also be, how do we manage to tackle the climate crisis for countries that have less money and less opportunities to reduce and to tackle this issue. So I think also on an international solidarity plan, I think this will be a big topic also at the next conference.
And yeah, it's very interesting you're talking about international solidarity. And I mean, one thing is the countries, the politicians, the officials, let's say, taking part in those kind of conferences. But there is also a non-governmental, let's say, sphere. And maybe the scouts are also, they are also part of that. So what do you think can the scouts do? And what is the role of the scouts in all of that? What do you tell scouts what they could do to make a difference?
I mean, scouts have this huge educational role and so many opportunities to reach many different young people all across the world. So education is definitely one of the important SDGs if we talk about sustainability, and we need to educate young people all around the world about these topics, what role they can play, what is important. So I think, of course, it is something on an individual plan where each and every one of us has to take over responsibility, and scouting can do that as an educator, and so as an educational youth movement. And of course, scouting also as an institution has to play its role. So by cooperating between other major actors like the UN, like the other Big Six, like the Red Cross, other youth organizations, so to put a bit of political pressure on this topic, so that young people can like play their role also in putting pressure on all of us as politicians, because honestly, as a politician, you need civil society to be active, to engage, to put pressure on you, because only like that there is the pressure on political parties to put this on the agenda.
So you like pressure then, as a politician?
Of course, you need it, and especially in the climate movement. Fridays for Future, this demonstration, this young people saying, hey, we hold you accountable, is helping the cause, because I think obviously there are always other interests around the world, economical ones, jobs are at stake. All these issues are important, but if we have the right lobby and the right pressure to do something and put climate change first and this whole transition into place, then we reach something in common. And there we need civil society to play its role, and scouting as an organization is one of them. So it definitely helps the cause.
So listening to you, I think we did not do too much of a bad choice to put sustainability, including environmental sustainability, as one of our priorities in the regional scout plan for this training, right?
No, absolutely. I congratulate you for doing so. So I think it's important as a youth movement and as such a big actor as WASM is, but also scouting on their national realities and in their local groups, that we take over responsibility in this topic. Because I think, first, as I said, the educational role, the political role is important. And let's not forget, we set an example for society. So if people in their town see that scouts are taking care about their environment, they educate, but they also might have projects on an environmental scheme. They try to set up for more biodiversity by planting trees, by planting different flowers in their fields, by installing solar panels. All these kinds of things help also to raise awareness for the people living around us. And they see that, hey, there's a bunch of young people that is active here. Why shouldn't I do something? And of course, we all know we are also messengers in our families, in our communities. So I think there is a huge potential in passing over this message. So by putting this into into the WASMS agenda and by breaking it down to national scout plans, by to educate and give over information about this and trainings on academies, but also in the local groups, I think we're doing exactly the right thing that is needed at the moment.
Now, one question we ask all our participants in the podcast is to tell us something that people who don't know you very well, they don't know. So a fun fact about you or something you did that might be a little bit surprising.
One very crazy experience I once had was the fact that I slept in a tent. It wasn't at a scout camp, but it was back in Africa, in Namibia, where I slept in the tent, and I woke up by an elephant. So basically by the smell of an elephant. So you just have to imagine you're lying in a tent, sleeping rather peacefully. And at some point you wake up because you have this very disgusting smell of something very close to you in your nose. And then you awake, and then you hear some crunchy sounds. And basically I realized, and obviously I knew I was camping in wildlife Africa, that there was an animal next to my tent. So I've looked through this mosquito net, and I saw this huge shadow very close to me of an elephant eating the tree where my tent was standing below. So this elephant was standing, I would say, 1 meter away from the tent. I got really scared that he would climb on me. So it was quite a dangerous moment at some point. So I wasn't sleeping at all that night anymore.
Sounds scary, but how did you know the smell of an elephant? How did you know it was an elephant by just smelling?
I mean, I realized that something huge would be standing there. You hear like the feet, you hear it eating, and then at some point by looking through the mosquito net, you realize that it's something very big that is eating a tree. It could also have been I don't know, a hippo or something like that. But it was like by looking at it, I realized that it was an elephant. So waking up by an elephant is definitely something I don't think everyone can tell that.
Well, obviously myself, I can't. And I think it's the same for many people. So, wow, that sounds scary, actually. Well, recently, Juna, we had a little exchange on a Netflix show called Seas Piracy, and you remembered me that we once spent some time together in Iceland, and as it was on the menu, I ordered a whale steak, and I remember you were not so happy about that. So, first of all, does that make me a bad person for you to have done that, and what was the impression that this show made on you? Why was it so inspirational for you?
To calm you down, you're not a bad person.
Okay,
I really like
you, Mikhail,
so no worries about that. But, I think, honestly, the fact that you're still thinking about it and that we still talk about it makes me realize that it also left an impression on you. So
absolutely.
I think the main goal was achieved by letting you think about the food you eat and where it comes from and if it's the right thing to do. And I think it's a lot about that. I think we should be very conscious about our consumption in general, about where is the food coming from, what prices are we paying for our food, is it necessary to have meat every day, and also is the production chain from this food a good one, or isn't there a better one? So it's more about responsible consumption that I would say, which is an important topic to me. And I think it should be for each and every one of us. And we have been to Iceland, and obviously eating whale is kind of a tradition there, and it's very much in their history, which is fair enough. And it's back in the days where we didn't have a globalized world. I guess it was okay to eat it because it was part of their culture. But knowing the things we know today about the ways that whales are killed, that it's a rare species, I think, like, from a today's point of view, I personally wouldn't find it good anymore to consume it, even though it was maybe okay if you would have lived in Iceland 100 years ago. So I think it's this kind of things that that I would flag there, but no, it doesn't make you a bad person. And obviously, also myself, I'm sometimes consuming things that have been on an airplane for a long time. So I think it's not always possible to avoid, but it's more about being aware of it, thinking of it, and trying to find the right balance for yourself there. And for me, that would be the most important start. And your second question is about Seaspiracy. I think, again, this is very closely linked. Only if we know where our food is coming from, what practices are there, what are the political realities, what damages are done. Only if we know things and we inform ourselves, we can make a conscious choice. And for me, it helped seeing that Netflix show. It helped me knowing, okay, this is where it's coming from. So I might still continue to eat fish, but I'm fully aware of like what the consequences are, or where it's coming from. What is this whole industry around? So it's a bit of, it's again, we're back in the educational topic, I'd say. So knowledge is power, and I think we all have the duty to inform ourselves of where things are coming from that we consume, and it makes us more responsible. And that would be a very important goal.
Well, yeah, that's a great answer. Maybe we should also say we're not trying to put Iceland here in the spotlight. I mean, it is clear that there are some regulations and that they are respected. So it's but what you're saying, it's to be conscious about what you do and how you behave, and to make conscious choices. And us having that conversation, I totally agree. It made us aware of something that we were not. I mean, I also watched the series after you told me about it. And I mean, it is impressive to see that. I've seen a lot that I didn't know either. But also sometimes when I see these kind of things, I feel that it leaves you very, sometimes you don't know what to do about it, what can you do? And then also it depicts a rather dark image of the problem, and it shows and exposes the problems without offering too many solutions there. So it's rather not a motivating experience to watch something like this, but to see a dark picture. So what can you say to people to stay positive about our planet and to make that positive change, even though there are some problems?
Yeah, totally. I get that. And I also hear it in politics a lot, that we are lecturing people, we are forbidding things. So it can be put in a very negative frame. And of course, this also creates fears. We are changing people's lifestyle. So people feel a bit offended by politicians, by NGOs that are putting this topic in front of us. But for me, it's also very closely linked to offering alternatives, to show people, okay, this maybe costs a bit more because we put a price on it because pollution needs to cost. But on this other hand, we make other things available. Like, let's say in Luxembourg, we have free public transport. So we want to encourage people by not taking the car. So I think it's a big question of giving the right incentives. And I think that we in politics have to think about this as well. If we forbid things, that we offer alternatives and promote them also. And to turn it around, this whole discussion about positivity or negativity, for me, a very positive thing is we are actors of change. We as our generation are able to change something. So we are the last possible people on this earth that like can turn this around. And we see, we had floodings in Luxembourg 2 weeks ago. We see the consequences and we see which damages the future generations would be confronted with if we are not changing our behavior today. So I think that this is also a very powerful message that we have the ownership of a worldwide crisis and we can do something about it, each and every one of us, we in politics, on an institutional level. So, and I think it really goes hand in hand. And I think this is also a great message. It comes with great responsibility, of course, but I think we still have this positive perspective for our planet and for mankind, and we should use that. And I think that's really to see ourselves as actors of change would definitely be a very positive message. And I think it's in that perspective that I would like all of us to see it.
That's a great great message. So we can still do something. That's very promising to hear that from you as well. Now, but let's put you yourself as a person a little bit in the spotlight here. What do you do personally to protect the climate and to change something? When you say you are an actor of change, what do you do in your personal day-to-day life?
Well, I mean, my job already consists a lot of changing a system, and that is already a big part of my personal effort. So to engage in politics and fight battles that are not the easiest ones, especially against forces that might be sometimes feel to be a bit bigger than yourself. So I think that's my personal commitment to engage in politics. And as a private person, for example, I bought an electric car a few months ago, and I try to take the bike more, but honestly, sometimes I'm a bit lazy. So then I only bike to the train station instead of biking to the city as a whole. So I have definitely some work to do there. Talking about conscious consumerism, I'm thinking more and more of where my food is coming from. I'm not a vegetarian yet. I'm eating very limited meat and try to really reflect on, okay, is it from a local production? Is it organic? So these kind of things. And a big thing, let's say better a task I gave myself, and I really need to work on that. That was my New Year's task I gave for 2021. Was to look more of where my clothes is coming from. I like shopping. I'm human. It's something I like to do. And of course,
I actually hate shopping, to be honest.
I'm so surprised by that.
Yeah, Matthias. I do hate shopping. I don't like that.
So, so I think it's something that I like to do. And I said, okay, do I really need that many clothes? And don't I want to see more like where it's coming from, where it's produced, what are the conditions? Does it need to be travel from one continent to another? Is there more local shops? So these kinds of things, I'm not there yet. I haven't reached my personal goal there, but it's something I want to work on myself. So that would be a commitment that I try to work on.
Well, that's good. And maybe some people can take an example of that. So we're already almost at the end, and let's wrap that up. When we think about sustainability and the things we've talked about, what would be the key messages you think our listeners should take away from this, reflecting about sustainability?
As I said, put pressure on politicians if you can, and start with initiatives. So if it's in your local scout group, think of where you can be an actor of change, where you can do something and try to establish that as something that is being done in your hometown again and again. Try to motivate people to join the movement and educate young people on the importance of biodiversity and of the whole topics around climate change. It's so important that we as scouts are leaders in this topic. So that would be something that that I would pass on to each and every scout. And as individuals, I think all of us have some things in our daily life that we can change and that we can improve. It doesn't need to be everything at the same time. It can be step by step, slowly but steady. And I think if all of us do these efforts all together, I'm pretty positive about our future. And I think everyone has its role to play here. So that would be a thought I want to share with all of you at the end of this very nice talk.
Well, then I think we just have to do it, right? But one thing we shouldn't forget in having all these things we should think about and do, we also should relax sometimes. And at the very end, we would like to have some recommendation from you. What can people do, or what do you do to relax when you're a little bit stressed? And I guess that sometimes you are a little bit stressed, right? So what is a recommendation you can share with our listeners?
Yes, honestly, at the moment, I'm living in a very, very busy time. So it's rather tough. It's end of the year, and there's a lot on my plate. So one thing I love to do is take a walk in the woods, be outdoors. Especially like in the woods, it has such a calming atmosphere, and it makes you sort your thoughts, even in times where you feel like chaos is all around you. So this is like, it has almost a spiritual dimension for me to take a good long walk in the woods. And the other thing sometimes, because honestly, coming home late at night, I'm not going to the woods then. I love to sit on the couch and watch another Netflix show, which isn't Suspiracy, but it's called Atypical. It's a great show. It's a great series on Netflix. I can definitely recommend it. It has many great aspects about inclusion, about friendship, and about growing up as a young adult. So definitely a recommendation from my side.
Thank you very much, Juna, for being with us for this podcast, and all the best and success with your further career in scouting and politics.
Thanks a lot, Juna. It was a privilege and always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you for taking the time. Thanks also to Lars for being support, and also to Tobias, our producer.
And we would welcome all of your comments. So use the comments function to give us feedback to this podcast, or message us on Twitter or Facebook to Scouting in Europe.
Stay tuned for another edition of our podcast. Thanks, Juna. Have a good time.
Thank you. Bye-bye, guys.